I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The following is a paid program. The views or claims made are not necessarily those of WILK staff, management, or sponsors. It's time for Laurie and Lynn. Local talk to start your weekend right. And now, Laurie and Lynn on WILK.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Wonderful. How are you?
I am feeling really good. Much better than I did the last time I was here.
Yay.
Yeah. I think that 5 or 6 days that I took off and around the holiday last week made a difference. I feel much more rested and healthy and whatever. So,
yay.
That's good stuff.
Good. I'm happy.
So what was going on in your world this week?
I forget. I'm trying to remember. I did do things, and I just can't remember what they are. I have to look back on my...
I'll do a couple. Maybe it'll come back. The first thing that we did was last weekend on Saturday. We went to a family gathering at the lake to celebrate the graduation of one of Pat's cousin's children. And when we went there, we had a very interesting surprise in that the grandmother of all of these people and mother had passed away that morning. So this, of that generation of Patrick A. DiNapoli's family, his mother's maiden name was Fazio.
Or Fazio.
Or Fazio. And that's what I keep saying to both of them. I don't know which. Nobody seems to have an answer for me in the family. But Fazio. There were four siblings. And the youngest is still with us, even though she has dementia. That's Aunt Anita Raffrano, who is living with her son and daughter-in-law in Fort Belvoir in Virginia. And she is at this point relatively fixed in, as far as where she can be. She has full-time care. But she is the last survivor of that generation. And it was interesting because when we got together for this graduation celebration at the lake, it was a lot of reminiscing. There were five children of Aunt Dorothy, and four of them are still alive. And it's just interesting that one of them, which I didn't remember until we went to the viewing on Monday night at Guido's funeral home. Uh-huh. In
were you walking at an angle? One.
Yes, the tipped house in West Grand. And
I get motion sickness when I
know a lot of people. There's a ton of jokes
scarier.
About it. It's bizarre. I don't understand why they ever left it like that, but they did. So one of the siblings of Aunt Dorothy's children is married to a woman whose former name is Mary Bisignani. So she is very much a part of Catalanos, uh-huh. which is right next door.
Yes.
And she is also the sister of Louis Bisignani and the aunt of Judge Marjorie Bisignani Moyle.
Mm-hmm.
So they were all there. And I found out from speaking to Louis Bisignani that he listens to us on Saturday mornings. So we want to do a shout out to him and say, yo, Louis. And he's also currently, I think he said he was producing or directing, I forget which now, a play. He's great at writing plays and producing plays. It's called Wit, and it's at the Providence Playhouse, which he owns. And it's running now through, I think, the end of July. And I don't know if anybody knows the story of Louis Bisignani, but his wife, Nancy Bisignani, who is no longer with us, the two of them were just characters. They were really wild and crazy people who held nothing back as far as their emotions. Nancy died a few years ago, maybe 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, from breast cancer. And this play called Wit is about a man whose wife is dying from cancer. And I said, Louis, how could you produce that? He said, I didn't think I could, but he said, it's a comedy, if you can imagine that. And I said, okay, I guess that's the name, Wit. But he said, it's a really interesting play. And he said, I really enjoyed it. So we throw that out to all of our peeps that are around here that might have some free time on Fridays, Saturdays. And I think there's a matinee on Sunday at the Providence Playhouse called Wit. And then...
Where is the Providence Playhouse?
It's right near the corner as
Providence.
We say, at Bull's Head.
Yeah, but where?
Right across the street from what he said is Fratelli's restaurant, which is on not North Main, but the other road, yeah. Providence Road, that comes up there.
Right. Okay, I was wondering where that was.
It's very close to
Marazzi's.
I've never been there.
Okay.
But that's what he keeps telling me. It's across the street from Fratelli's.
Okay, then there
all right,
we go.
Fine. And that's the end of that. So after that, then that was Monday night. Wednesday night, I went to a viewing for a man who was probably, it was, there's no probably about it, my most favorite teacher. And that's Michael Peregrum.
I saw he passed away in the... He was French and German or something?
Russian. Yes.
French and Russian?
He was the only teacher in the Scranton School District who taught Russian. And he struggled all the time to get enrollment in the class.
Yeah, that would be a little...
But, you know, French...
You didn't take Russian,
no,
did you?
I didn't.
God.
Even though he wanted me to take it, I said, no. I think a big part of it, too, is the fact that Russian has a different alphabet besides the fact that it's not one of the Romance languages. So it was really, really hard to do. But he had passed away.
It's all Greek to me, so.
You're funny. So he had passed away, and I went to see him. And it was really, I started thinking a lot about who he was to me and why would I say that he was the best teacher I ever had? I mean, you've been exposed to lots of teachers in your life, and they all have different impact on your life. But this guy was just head and shoulders above the rest. And I realized that because I was a teenager at that point, I think I was 15 or 16 when I started French. I started in eighth grade when I was at West Scranton, and then because I was thrown into the class. That was one of those, you know, where... The school caved, Robert Morris School caved, and we were forced to go somewhere about 2 weeks into our eighth grade. So when we got there, the classes were already filled, and they just threw me into French. And I didn't really understand too much of it, but I thought, well, if I'm going to Central, which I did, and I have to pick a language, why not French? Because I'm a little bit more familiar with it. I had no idea where that was going when I made that decision. But he... for some reason decided that I was somebody that was really going to do something really big. So he just kept pushing me way, way beyond my comfort level. And I was enrolled in summer school, which I never did before, never had to. But he said, I want you to enroll in summer school, and I want you to come in here, and for 4 hours a day, I'm going to have you go into the language lab, which was one of these classrooms where they had all these little carrels, and you sat there with headphones on and listened to things. For 4 hours a day, he had me in there listening to music, conversations, whatever it was in French. And I did that 2 years in a row. Then he wanted me to take the SATs in French. And I thought, oh, come on. I don't. Well, I did. and I did really well in them, so he was thrilled. What I didn't know was when we graduated, I had the highest scores in French, but I also had the highest scores in French of all of the high schools in the Scranton School District. So I got some kind of a little prize for that. That's all. He was just so excited that I know I would never have done that had he not pushed me to do this. Mm-hmm. And what I learned out of it was that if you keep pushing yourself to do things above and beyond and step
you
into things,
you
don't
it.
Know how to do it. But there's an excellent chance that you will come out of this really doing well. Mm-hmm. And I have to thank him for that because it wasn't just the French. It was the knowledge that I could do things beyond what I thought I could do.
Yep.
And to keep going.
It's always neat to have teachers like that. It's funny because I ran into one of my favorite, of course I called him my favorite when I saw him yesterday, Nick Petula, mm-hmm. who was at the Historical Society when I happened to walk in. He does a lot of volunteer work there. And of course he's retired. And so I walked in. I said, "Oh, my favorite teacher." And he said, "My favorite student."
A little love fest,
he was
it?
So he was in. He went to. We went to Spain. He was one of the chaperones when we went for our two week jaunt between uh-huh. junior and senior high year. And we had such a good time. So anyway, I just love him, and it's he really was a terrific teacher, and I just loved being part of his class, and he was great. But I mean, there were, you know, when you think of the teachers you love,
yeah,
it's funny because most of the teachers that I loved the most were men mm-hmm. teachers. I mean, Miss Collarin, M.J. Collarin, was my psychology teacher in 12th grade at West, and she was incredible. And she, because I love psychology, so she was my favorite there. But then Mr. Mosley and Mr. Roskis and Mr. Petula, they were like those three guys stand out. Two were English, one was social studies.
Uh-huh.
Actually, Mr. Kelly, too, was civics, and he was very good. And I remember the time in 10th grade in civics, and I used to ace the class, and I could not remember what the question was. And he saw me. He could see me struggling, and he came over to me, and he goes, "Is everything all right?" And I said, "No." And he said, "What's wrong?" And he could see that everything else was done but one question. I said, I said, "Mr. Kelly, I just can't remember." I said, "I know it." I said, he goes, "Well, obviously, the rest of your paper is filled out." I said, "Yeah." So he gave me one little hint and it snapped. I said, "Oh," and then I wrote the whole thing down. And of course I got 100 and I was so thrilled because it was, I just could not think of it.
Yes.
And all he did was give me like a little hint of something
yeah.
and it just had the floodgates open.
That's great.
But he was also the student where I literally where I took my across the aisle neighbors and did her test for her and then gave her mine while I did hers and gave it back.
What?
Yes. Yes.
This is blatant cheating
you're talking about? I didn't cheat. I helped her get a grade, you know?
Oh,
I mean, I guess I'm not the one who cheated, am I? I was the cheating.
Oh,
I don't know.
You were aiding and abetting.
Yes, that's it. But what are you going to do?
That's funny.
Oh, God.
That's
so
good.
Anyway, but yeah, those I love those reflections of your teachers because they really... mm-hmm. made such a difference
and
when
he
you
was,
think of them.
He was,
and I saw he passed, and I read that he was a... Because Meyer had said, "Oh, my God, he was a..."
Yeah, Central.
He didn't
right.
have either yep. one of those, but he didn't take either one of those, French or Russian. But.
Well, it was interesting meeting his three
family,
kids.
Family, yeah. It's nice.
And when I first walked in and said hi to his wife, widow, I hate to use the term, but that, I said... "Mrs. Paragon, my name is Lynn Evans." And she went, "Oh, you're Lynn Evans. He has your book right next to his..." And she went on with this whole thing about that.
See?
And I said, "Oh, wow." Because truly, he was one of my biggest fans.
Oh.
You know, I mean, even after
how old was he, Lynn?
80.
Aw.
Yeah, he just turned 80.
Aww.
So it was really interesting.
God bless him.
I said to the kids, you know, one of the things I loved about him as a teacher was his energy level. When he walked into the room, he'd slam the door and he would start
level.
Yep. Like, wow, you had
to jump in, right?
You couldn't fall asleep in that
class.
Exactly. That's all I have to say.
All right, well, We will be right back. You're listening this morning to the Laurie and Lynn Show.
Here's Laurie and Lynn.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fabulous.
That's good.
And you?
I'm doing just fine.
There you go.
My name is Lynn Evans. I am the managing director of Women of Substance, LLC, which is a financial planning firm specifically for the financial needs of baby boomer women. I'm also the host of a podcast called Power of the Purse, and it's available on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
And I'm Laurie Cadden, the owner of Laurie Cadden Enterprises, which is a fundraising, PR, and special event business.
And did you get your AARP magazine?
No. With Willie Nelson?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Oh, I didn't read it yet. I thought
you meant good. Because there's a little quiz in here.
It's fun because it's funny because I saw it on my desk in my office today.
Yeah.
And I thought, I brought it up with stuff and because I bring all my mail up and then I shred what I don't. And I thought, oh, I never looked at this month. So yeah. I did not get it. But Lynn, I have a question for you before
what?
You ask. Oh, excuse me. If you could have dinner with anybody living,
yeah,
who would it be and why? Sit down and have a nice dinner with somebody.
I think it'd be Warren Buffett. Just because I want to know what it was that took a guy from the cornfields of the Midwest to a man who learned that kind of knowledge and made such a huge fortune. Mm-hmm. There are steps along the way there where most people would have said, oh, I can't do that, or that doesn't make any sense. And I want to know about the failures, too. I want to know what did he fail at, and how did he get past that and keep going? That's what I want to know from Warren Buffett. Now, if I wanted to have lunch with him, I could pay what the current rate is $5 million to have lunch with him, because every year he does that. He opens it up to people, and whatever that money is that he gets, he gives it to his foundation. Oh, so God. People bid to have lunch with him.
Uh-huh.
Nah. I ain't bidding.
But
I would love to just have dinner with him and just, you know, find out what he's all about.
Okay.
Now, what about you?
Bill Clinton.
Why?
Because I love his charisma and I love his people skills and I love that wheeling and dealing kind of charismatic kind of just everything about that. Yeah. I just like that.
Yeah. Okay. So is that going to happen?
I hope someday. You never know.
Well, he's well into his 80s.
Many
isn't he?
Women, too. I mean, there's plenty of women like Diane Keaton.
Oh, absolutely. I could go through a list.
Uh-huh. But just for the sake of the charismatic part, the connected part. Like, mm-hmm. So go ahead. We have a quiz.
Okay, it's a very simple one. It's only four questions. It's an either or, so you don't have to know much about anything. So
thanks.
I want to test your breakfast IQ. And this one is, which of these food choices would make a smarter start to your day? First one is the meat matchup, bacon versus sausage.
Bacon.
Why?
Because I think there's probably less fat in the bacon. Mm-hmm. And it's a smaller piece, and I just think bacon is better for you than sausage, even though I love both.
Well, you're right.
There we go.
And the why is because it chews bacon, and the number of calories drops to 131 calories versus 277. Mm-hmm. It has a third less sodium and half the saturated fat.
Yeah.
So bacon is definitely the choice.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the potato showdown. Home fries versus hash browns.
Hash browns.
Actually, home fries.
Oh, okay.
And the choice that's least fried, which in this case is the home fries. They're actually probably just sauteed and whatever.
Well, that's true, because you kind of push down the home fries, hash browns kind of are.
The hash browns are all, there's all kinds of oil in between.
That's true.
Thick potato slices present less surface area on which oil can take hold.
Okay.
They deliver less fat and about 15% fewer calories. Not a whole lot, but...
Oh, well, I was going to say, because the reason I said hash brown was because they're cut so thin, the like more of a finer consistency to the potato. I wasn't thinking about the fat really at that point, but go ahead.
All right, and then the Super Bowls, high fiber cereal versus oatmeal.
Which one is better?
Mm-hmm.
Oatmeal.
Actually, this answer is no. It's the high fiber cereal.
Really?
Those who eat the most fiber have lower rates of heart disease, diabetes, even knee pain.
Yeah, but there's fiber in oatmeal.
That's because the one that's in this one is insoluble fiber.
Oh, okay.
Okay, which tends to cleanse out the colon.
Uh-huh, I get it.
The other one is soluble fiber.
All right.
They delivered, the high fiber cereal delivered more than twice as much fiber as oatmeal with fewer calories.
Okay.
And I agree with you that you have to understand what kind of fiber.
Mm-hmm.
Because they both have different benefits and different disadvantages. Okay, and the fourth one is main dish event, egg sandwich versus breakfast burrito.
Egg sandwich.
You're right. And every time I see that, I think of Mansoor's.
Because you love them.
Oh, I love them.
And I know why, because there's more egg in the burrito.
Yeah.
And more fat and calories. And sometimes a burrito can be more calories itself than the two pieces of bread.
Yep, you're right. So the restaurant burritos. Now, restaurant burritos, let's make sure we distinguish that. They averaged over 1,000 calories each.
Yeah.
The average egg sandwich had just 722.
Oh, wow.
It also delivered 32 grams of protein, an amount that in one study led to 15% fewer calories consumed at a follow-up lunch.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
So there you are. That's it.
That's the quiz?
That's the quiz.
Oh, boy.
So you did 50-50.
Oh, great.
And another thing, I really like this, too, because I am a classic complainer of doctor's offices.
In which way?
Being there and waiting and watching and waiting and waiting. You got a 2 o'clock appointment, you don't see the doctor till 3.
Yeah,
I don't understand.
Do you understand that? Do you understand why that happens?
Oh, I know. I do understand why. Because
why?
The
because
person before you.
Or?
Well, that's one possibility. But the other thing is that it starts in the morning and keeps going through the day. So if you've got somebody who takes up more than their allotted time, or there's an emergency, or the doctor discovers something that requires immediate attention that has to be done, then everybody gets thrown off.
Mm-hmm.
So this article in the same magazine, AARP, talks about the doctor diaries, what physicians wish patients knew. So the first one is, we are working on your case, even if it looks like we have disappeared. Which, you know, I see that, and I wonder, you know, it's 15 minutes they've been gone. What are they doing?
Working on your case. Isn't that like a lawyer versus a doctor?
Well, yes.
What the heck does that mean?
What it means is when the doctor's not at your bedside, he or she is writing up your evaluation, the plan, and the orders.
That's
outlining
true.
What needs to be done.
Their notes and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, so, okay. I see that. And then number two, when we keep you waiting, it's not because we think our time is more valuable than yours.
Yes, they do. Yes,
That's what I say. That's what I say. That's
oh, yes,
my pet peeve.
Yes, they do.
But here's their response. If the patient before you mentions blood in his or her stool or talks about suicidal impulses, your appointment needs to wait. Your best bet is to schedule the first appointment of the day. Well, I have done that. I've done the first appointment after lunch. And found that there were 3 people who had the first appointment after lunch.
Yes, because they overbook. Yes.
That infuriates me.
I think they overbook anticipating cancellations.
Well, whatever they do. It's just annoying.
So here's what you do.
What?
You don't go.
You don't go.
You don't go to the doctor.
Oh, well.
That's my philosophy.
That's your world.
Not
yes.
Good.
And this is something I didn't think about when, and Man, it has to be
or
true.
Or you make sure you're best friends with all of your doctors so you can hang out with them at home or on the weekend, or you could call them or whatever.
Or text them and get
your
answer.
That's what you do.
That's it.
That's the charismatic part of meeting Bill Clinton. Not that I need him to train me.
Are we back in him again?
You know what I mean. Go ahead.
All right. Many of us have PTSD. This doctor, Joanne Jarrett, who wrote this, said, I have nightmares about patients down an infinite hall, each with a problem worse than the last. In my short career, I've seen a baby take her last breath. I've watched a woman bleeding uncontrollably after giving birth, lose consciousness as I worked, a pool of her blood expanding at my feet. I've heard a woman, after having both legs traumatically severed, saying goodbye to her father, assuming she wouldn't survive. I could go on. We know we signed up for it, but keep in mind, when you're tempted to be angry with your doctor, we're under stress too.
Yes, true.
Okay. All right, I'll give you a pass on that one.
That's true.
Number six, falls frighten us. We see the transformation from healthy and active to ill and dependent far too often, and frequently it's because of a fall. A preventative measure, stand next to a strong countertop, then stand with just 1 foot without holding on. If you need support before the 5 to 10 second mark, your balance should be addressed. And number seven, we want you to make decisions while clear-headed. Having a written description of your medical treatment wishes and advanced healthcare directive will ease emergency situations for you, your care team, and your loved ones. All hospital patients are asked what their wishes would be if their breathing or heartbeat were to stop. But it's better to make a clear-headed decision when you're not gripped by fear. You can find a legal advanced directive form at AARP.org. Mm-hmm. And tell us if you're having memory issues. A failing memory can be scary, but even at age 70 and beyond, memory issues are often caused by things a doctor can help with. Depression, medication effects, heart problems, or hormone abnormalities. Oh, and avoid multitasking. It's overrated. I don't know.
I don't think we have a choice, do we?
That's exactly what I was going to say. How could I possibly live if I didn't multitask?
You know what?
Yeah.
That's what we do best. I actually find I function so much better having to do many things at once versus a day that I don't have a lot going on.
Yeah, because I think it's a greater sense of accomplishment.
Well, I don't know. I just like to be juggling things. Up in the air, Junior Birdman. Remember that song?
No.
Okay. Anyway.
Okay, another quick one. We make mistakes, actually, doctors.
Really?
Our fear of screwing up is exhausting, weighty, and ever-present. It's the hardest thing about doctoring. We do make mistakes. Be wary of anyone who won't admit that.
Uh-huh.
And here's another one I love, that we know you've answered this question already, and we're sorry to ask again. When you call for an appointment, you're asked what's going on. Then, when you're checked in, you're asked again. So when you finally get to see the doctor, you're sick of the story. But we can't help it. We have to hear it with our own ears. Then why do we have to do it two times before we get there?
Uh-huh.
Duh.
I also think, though, we need to be, just give people a break. When you go, you have to go, knowing you could be delayed, and sit and chill out and stop getting nervous and make the time available when you go for as long as you have to go. You know, because there are things that they can't help. But after so long, I do think people should just get up and leave.
I do, too.
I mean, you have to give it so long and then say forget it.
Yep. You know, I couldn't agree with you more.
It is a busy. It's their lives are. It is. It's crazy. So, what are you going to do?
Nothing much.
That's it. That's how it works. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Laurie and Lynn Show, the Laurie and Lynn Show, and we'll be right back.
Here's Laurie and Lynn.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Laurie and Lynn Show. I'm Laurie Cadden, the owner
of the entertainer of the year.
I am the owner of Laurie Cadden Enterprises, which is a fundraising, PR, and special event business.
And I am Lynn Evans. I am the managing director of a financial planning firm called Women of Substance, LLC. It was specifically It was specifically designed for the financial planning needs of baby boomer women. And I'm also the host of a podcast called Power of the Purse, available on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google
Play. That's a new one, iStitcher.
So anyway, here we are.
You know, I wanted to tell you that last week, we have the Governor's Arts Awards happening at the Cultural Center on the 8th of August.
Yeah.
So I'm... committee that is formed has been meeting for months and things are happening, but we did First Friday this week, that last Friday night. And so there were some of us in one location. We were over at Studio RD. Doug Smith and the Dixieland All-Stars performed. And when he came in, Doug said, I'm going to just set up outside. So he set the band up outside of Studio RD. Rosie Duffy D'Antona was kind enough to let us use her facility, which I love, and it's right in the 300 Happening block of Penn Avenue.
Yeah.
And so it was absolutely, we opened the door, had the air, because it was so gorgeous, the air coming in, because it was a perfect night last week. And Doug played, and then we set up some folding chairs outside, and then we had the built-in audience of AV, which is right next door, because people were outside having dinner. So, and people walking by who congregated, it was wonderful. So we had such a good time.
Very cosmopolitan,
yes,
kind of place.
It was so neat to be there. And so we thank Rosie, who has, as I said, Studio RD on Penn, 300 of Penn, 324, as a matter of fact, and which I will be going to very shortly. And it was beautiful. I was so relaxed just sitting in there. I put my feet up and listened to Doug's music, and it was so upbeat, and people were great. I talked to some wonderful people, the Pollock girls from Westside and their mom, Julie. And they're the cutest two twin sisters, the little ones. Their names are Lucy and Grace. And then Sadie is the oldest daughter, and she is... going to be a senior at West. And so we had a big West Scranton. She's going to be the featured dancer this year for West. And she's the wonderful young family. So anyway, I had so much fun just hanging out and being part of it. But I'll tell you, it was packed downtown.
That's good. I'm glad to hear you say that.
And
that's nice.
We're going to do it again at Rosie's for the first Friday in August as well. So it'll be nice. The Jazz Festival will be going on at the same time up at the Radisson, but it's going to be a good weekend.
I still have not gotten to AV since they've moved.
I haven't either.
I would like to do that.
People love it. So, and of course, I loved the Banshee when it was there.
Yeah.
Was one of my favorites. But anyway.
Okay, so this article I thought was interesting, and to the extent that we find that this is something very hard for families to talk about. And there's an organization called aginginvestor.com. The title of it is a family member ripping off your aging parent? It's one thing if you've got somebody who comes in from the outside to do it, but it's very hard to confront a sibling or an aunt or uncle or something when you suspect something not so good is going on. So here's the scenario. Carrie got concerned when her brothers suddenly began to exclude her from their mom's financial affairs. It didn't feel right, but she wasn't sure she could do anything about it. When she called, she got that slow burn feeling that comes over me, this is the author, when I hear about financial elder abuse. As a consultant for folks with aging parents, it's not the first time I've heard this kind of story. Carrie and her brothers were supposed to all share authority on the durable power of attorney for mom. Mom and her lawyer had set it up that way at mom's request. It's nice in theory, this idea of being democratic. It's just not practical. Unwittingly, the lawyer had put the three siblings into a trap. One could say no to any decision, and none of them could move forward. That's dumb. That right there is dumb. If any one of the three said no, then it doesn't go any it doesn't go forward. Yeah. It should be a majority. You got three, two.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Mom has dementia, Carrie reports. This makes her vulnerable, even if she's functioning fairly well in caring for herself at this time. Carrie's brothers are starting down the path of making themselves suspects of the crime of elder abuse. Besides shutting Carrie out of the decisions, they've taken her car and are using her credit cards for personal things. This is a brewing crisis. Here are seven warning signs everybody needs to know if this is happening in your family. Number one, a family member becomes secretive about the parent's finances. Carrie knew what Mom's regular expenses were and what she spent every month. Mom is 87. When Carrie got excluded from online access to Mom's accounts, it raised a red flag. Two, a family member lives with the parent and depends on the parent for financial support. Carrie's brother Jack lives with Mom. He has a job, but Mom pays all his bills. This has gone on for some time. Now he's using Mom's credit card, and he apparently doesn't want Carrie to see what he's spending. Three, a family member begins to isolate the aging parent from others. When there is anyone blocking visits, restricting access of other family members to the elder, it's another red flag. The potential abuser doesn't want anybody looking too closely at what's going on, and the method to avoid scrutiny is to keep the elder away from the other family members. Number four, an adult child insists on being present when anyone else is with the aging parent. That's a big sign. Mm-hmm. It can be a sign that an adult child is threatening the aging parent if he or she talks about the financial manipulation the elder knows is going on. If the elder has concerns, the abuser doesn't want the aging parent to reveal this. Number five, a family member has a substance abuse problem and has influence over an aging parent with memory problems. Drug and alcohol dependency can make a liar out of just about anyone who has this issue. Memory-impaired aging parents are easy pickings for money to support the dependency habit. The adult child or other relative uses the relationship with the elder to manipulate loans out of the elder, and the elder forgets what happens or can't make sense of it but says yes. Six, sudden change in estate planning documents, including durable powers of attorney. Cognitive impairment begins subtly at first, but the elder's vulnerable to manipulation, even in the earliest stages. When names on legal documents suddenly get added or removed, it's a suspicious sign. Mm-hmm. Seven, kidnapping and moving the elder to an adult child's home without notice. This is a tricky problem. If adult protective services asks the elder if he or she wants to be with the adult child, and the elder says yes, there's nothing adult family services is going to do at that point. Mm-hmm. More evidence of elder abuse will be needed to get law enforcement involved. And if you do suspect abuse and want to protect your aging parent, contact Adult Protective Services in your area. Collect the specific information that made you suspicious ahead of time. Yes, you must name names, give dates of suspicious activity, and provide facts the authorities can check out. Mm-hmm. Our financial elder abuse problem in this country, and this number blew me away, cost elders $2.9 billion mm-hmm. every year.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's not just people with dementia.
That's true.
You know, that's the other thing.
Yeah, it
could be anything. And I will tell you that sometimes people don't believe you, the other person, when you stick your neck out to make a claim. You can get your hand slapped, because I know that it happened. It mm-hmm. happened.
Yeah.
And it is a crying shame what things people don't believe are really going on, and you end up looking like a jerk and by sticking your neck out to help somebody. That's why people don't do it, because of the scrutiny. And again, if they say they're going to do it because they're being brainwashed or manipulated by somebody, they're going to deny that it's happening, and you look like an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
When you know that it is going on. It's very difficult, Lynn. It's very difficult.
Yep, it is.
So
I fortunately, as a financial planner, have never seen that kind of abuse in any of the client relationships I've had. But I do know that there are people that have come in to me because they wanted to do some estate planning just to make sure that that didn't happen to them and their children. And, you know, shame on the lawyer who let that go by.
Well, that's the other thing. There's lawyers that do that too. So you have to be very careful.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, I hope you have a good weekend. Are you going to be at the lake?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you listening. Thank you so much. We will be back next week. Have a great weekend. Be safe and please be nice.
Bye.
Bye.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.